I'm Lana, and today I'll be talking about Acorn, a system that we built that improves the caching performance and distributed data processing framework. So this work is in collaboration with my advisor, Ravi Nethravali at UCLA, Matteo Interlandi at Microsoft, and our collaborator Eugene Wu at Columbia. So in particular, the data processing frameworks that we're targeting are the ones that take relational data models, so SQL, and executes them in a distributed environment in order to scale it to very, very large data. So this includes systems like Apache Ignite, Facebook's Presto, and Spark SQL, which is what Acorn is built on top of. So all of these frameworks are running very diverse query workloads, and there's some common classes within that. And one of those is iterative workloads. So what you're looking at in this illustration on the right is a depiction of the k-means algorithm on each iteration. So what's important to take away from this illustration is that on each consecutive iteration, the algorithm's understanding of the data doesn't change very much. So there's a lot of overlap between each of these iterations. And so ideally what we would like to do is we would like to avoid recomputing that overlap, and we just want to compute that incremental difference on each new iteration. There's a lot of different flavors that we can see this pattern happen in. It can happen within an algorithm, such as in graph processing and machine learning algorithms, where the iteration is contained within the algorithm itself. And we can also see it happen in the form of what we call interactive data exploration, where single or multiple users are issuing a stream of queries that are probably related. Across the board for all of these, this axiom sort of holds true that what we want to do is avoid recomputing the overlap of these iterations. So the solution to this is caching, which probably comes as no surprise since this is a caching talk. Caching avoids recomputing this overlap. So what we really want to happen in these systems is we want the system itself to find opportunities to reuse anything that has been cached as much as possible. So the decision of what to cache for things like LRU caching and eviction policies is pretty well studied. There are things cached. What we want to do is we want to take advantage of what has been cached as much as we possibly can. So this is making good use of things that have already been stored. So in order to do this, the cache manager needs to transparently find these caching opportunities without user input, hopefully, and also automatically rewrite these new and incoming queries to take advantage of the cache. So there's two challenges to this, which we'll discuss. The first one is a little bit more of an engineering problem, and it's just that the pipeline introduces obstacles for effective caching. The second one is a little bit more fundamental. It's that the presence of user-defined functions blocks the ability of cache managers to make comparisons between queries. So we'll talk about why these challenges are unique to distributed data processing frameworks as we discuss each one. But first, we can look at an example of what a series of iterative queries might look like and what happens when they're currently executed in these systems. So we have a series of queries. Our first query, we can imagine that we have some database of people and we're running a study, so we want to look at just the people who are adults. So user A runs this query. They happen to write it using a Lambda, which is turned into a UDF because that's how they're used to writing their queries. And it selects these two rows from this table. So maybe another user is issuing a different query where they're running a study that involves adults who have pets. So they write this query in a more slightly traditional SQL way, and this one row from each table ends up being selected. So we have Dylan and Cassidy, who is presumably a cat, selected as our users for this result. So there's a very intuitive relationship between these two queries. All right, if you are an adult who owns a pet, you are also an adult. So we know this for ourselves, but what we want is for the cache manager to be able to leverage this intuitive relationship in order to compute the second query faster. So what happens when these queries actually run through a pipeline? So let's say query one enters the pipeline. Right now our cache is empty because this is the first query we've ever seen. And it's turned into this tree-like structure plan where our UDF is contained in a black box. There's nothing in the cache, so we have no cache substitution. And it's also a pretty simple query, so there's not much to optimize here. So we just plan and execute this query and we pop it in the cache. Now our second query comes in, and we go into the cache substitution stage. What we're looking for here is we want to be able to make a cut at any one of these lines and find an exact match of the structure of this tree against what's in the cache. There's no way to chop this query up as is in order to find that match. So then we move on to optimization, where we apply a pretty common optimization where we push a filter below a join. This is good for a lot of reasons because you're basically reducing the size of data that's being shuffled during a join. And now you can actually kind of see that there is a similar structure where you can make this cut. Finally, since we already passed cache substitution, we're just going to physically plan and execute this query. So what went wrong here? There were a couple places where we missed an opportunity to use something that has been cached. The first one is that when we were actually performing the cache substitution stage, there was no place that we could find an exactly matching tree in the cache. The second problem is that even if we were to do cache substitution during optimization and we find this structure, we can't actually make this comparison because even though these two filters are semantically the same, we can't make that comparison automatically because the UDF is in a black box. So we'll start with this first challenge of how we integrate effective caching into this pipeline, because right now caches are comparing unoptimized plans instead of optimized plans. And optimized plans give us a nice canonicalized format that we can use to find these structures. So there's a pretty obvious solution to this that I'm sure that you're all thinking, which is if you want to have a nice canonicalized optimized plan, when you enter caching, just put the optimization stage before the caching stage. This is what relational databases do, and so traditionally, this is how a lot of effective caching techniques like predicate analysis are performed. They all assume that they have an optimized plan in hand when they make their comparisons. So there's a new problem with this, and that's that optimization is slow. So this is a log scale that you're looking at, and it's an optimization time per iteration of the connected components algorithm. So you can see that optimization time will grow exponentially as the plan grows with each iteration. So why does this happen? I mean, again, there's another obvious solution here, which is just fix your optimizer, which seems clearly broken. So of course we thought of that, and there are a couple of reasons why we decided not to do this. The first is that one of the reasons why these optimizers can be slow and are slow on iterative workloads is that they're very general. They're targeting a diverse set of workloads, and so they have a lot of rules that might not apply to every single query that they see, but do apply to some of them. Finally, it's also customizable. It has the ability to allow users and advanced developers to add their own optimization rules, and this is a feature, not a bug, so we don't want to take this away. Finally, this is more fundamental, and it's that we're working with immutable data. Remember that we're trying to execute SQL queries in a distributed environment. So if one node or one worker goes down, we want this computation to be deterministic. This is harder to do when we have updates happening to the underlying data. If we assume that our data is immutable, we can just restart that computation because that underlying data never changed. The downside of this is that since you can't update your underlying data, effectively any updates are logged as a change in a query plan. So this means for iterative algorithms, where you're giving some outputs at the end of the algorithm and then repeating it, your plan tends to grow exponentially. And this is growing with the complexity of the query, not with the size of the data. So these are all things that are pretty critical features of the system. So instead of changing that, we decided against using the optimization first pipeline. And instead, we used the insight that not all optimizations are helpful for caching. So instead, we do something where we take the optimization that was already happening and we break it into two parts. The first part we call partial optimization, and we put that stage before the cache. So what this looks like is we have a whole optimizer with a whole suite of rules that have to run to completion. We split them into two parts where one of them, the first part, are just the canonicalizing rules. These are pretty cheap. These are things that transform your query plan. So they're things that simplify predicates, propagate constants, and basically put things in a nice canonicalized form to make comparisons. Everything else can just happen later if we didn't find a hit in the cache. So that's great, but how well does this actually scale? So we ran the same experiment looking at the partial optimization time in comparison to the full optimization. So this is still a log scale, but you can see that partial optimization tends to level out and it'll stay pretty linear as the plan grows. So it's nice that we get these canonicalizing benefits of optimization without paying that heavy price. But how does this actually affect our ability to find caching opportunities? So this is the TPC-DS benchmark, which has a very large amount of queries. We took extracted the subset of queries from this workload that have iteration within them, so iterative style queries that have add predicates and add filters and things like that. And we scaled it to 100 gigabytes on a 16 machine cluster. So we find a lot of missed caching opportunities, and the overall execution time of the entire workload is less than half of what it was before. So this is a great little solution to being able to use all of our old great caching techniques in a distributed data processing framework. But we still run into the old challenge of UDFs. So UDFs are not really a new problem. They have been around for a while, but there's a few reasons why they're unique to distributed data processing frameworks. So one of them is that these user-defined functions can now be written in languages like Java and Scala, which are general-purpose programming languages. These are languages that people are familiar with and very comfortable with, and so it tends to encourage their use. We also have a lot of people who have domain-specific knowledge who are running their own analyses, so they might not know SQL, but they will know like these general languages, and they'll know their domain pretty well. So this is pretty common. So what we wanted for UDF translation is we wanted to look at like some of the previous work that has been done, because people have tried to address this in the past. And so the first thing that we want is we want it to, our UDF translation to be correct. So surprisingly enough, to date, no one has published anything where they have actually incorrectly translated UDFs, so all of the systems that we know of were correct. But we also wanted it to be transparent. We don't want our users to have to do any extra work with their UDFs in order to get this benefit. So things like user annotation are not what we're looking for. We also want this to work on general purpose programming languages. So there's been some previous work from Microsoft and a system called Ford that does translation on a language called T-SQL, which is a domain-specific language that is pretty close to SQL itself. What we want is we want this to work with like general purpose object-oriented programming languages, which is, there's no straightforward way to take their approach and apply it here. Finally, there's been some great work in program synthesis that can successfully take whole general purpose programming languages and turn them into MapReduce programs. Unfortunately, we want this to run really, really fast because we want to make sure that this is always operating on the order of milliseconds. And program synthesis can be pretty quick, but it can also take up to the order of minutes for a lot of programs that it's translating. So our solution to this was to build Acorn, and there's a few challenges to what we're trying to do here. So these are some example UDFs, and I don't actually expect you to read them, but what I want you to take away from this is that these UDFs can be arbitrarily long and complex. They have to deal with things from object-oriented programming languages features like user-defined types like classes. And also, with the introduction of the latest version of Java and in Scala, we have lambdas and anonymous functions. So our solution to this is to use a version of translation that operates via symbolic execution. We do this process within three steps, which we can walk through with a pretty simple UDF. So this is a somewhat contrived example to keep this pretty small. But our first step here is to translate this to an intermediate representation. So on the left, we have Java bytecode, and on the right, we have our intermediate representation. This step isn't actually strictly necessary. It's just that these systems are rapidly evolving, and simulating execution on a bytecode stack and maintaining stack pointers can be really frustrating. So in order for this to be something that people like actively maintain, we thought it was better to use something like this that's a lot easier to read and to translate. So our second step is just symbolic execution. So for every step in this function, what we're going to do is we're going to walk through and simulate this execution. So these first three lines are all just declaring variables. So we keep a symbol map that mimics the local environment and the symbol table that tracks the name, the type, and a native expression that we would translate this to. Finally, when we reach our first non-variable assignment statement, we create the root of our tree, which in this case is an if statement, and we translate this condition. And now we're just going to do what symbolic execution does best, which is recursively explore every path in this function. At the end, we'll end up returning with this tree that has all of the result values for each possible path through the function that looks something like this. So now our third step is rewriting, which is basically what we're going to do is just walk down this tree and build an expression from the tree. And then we take our old UDF that was written in like a high-level language, and we replace it with like a normal SQL filter based off of this tree. So it looks like this. So this is pretty ugly. this is not what you would usually expect from like a SQL filter. If you're paying close attention, then you can see that there's a lot of redundancy in the way that this is written. It actually just boils down to the condition. However, we don't actually need to go through all of the steps that compilers would usually do to make this nice and neat, because remember when we were talking earlier about partial optimization and how those rules have a nice canonicalizing effect on the plans that we're looking at? What we can do is we do this early enough that we can just pop it into our partial optimizer, and it performs all of those things like constant propagation, and it will perform these casts early of constants into Booleans, and then simplify the predicate, and we get this little filter that is very similar to the SQL version of this filter that we were looking at earlier. So how well does this work? We used the TPCH benchmark, which similar systems, like including Ford, have used, where they insert UDFs into the workload. So there's 19 UDFs of varying lengths that are used around 36 times in this workload. There's a little bit of an overhead for using UDFs just in general. So what we want to see is that we want to see that we effectively removed that overhead. So what you're looking at is that the baseline without any UDFs and pure SQL performs about the same as Acorn on UDFs. So what we can see is that our translation is faithful to native SQL, and also the overhead is pretty minimal. So those are the solutions to our two separate problems, and we can see what this looks like when we actually put this together and run it on real workloads. So we ran the connected components algorithm on two open source networks that ranged from hundreds of thousands of nodes to a million nodes, and they all contain UDFs and also iteration. So we get a 3x improvement over the raw baseline. So I'm sure that one thing that you guys might be wondering is that if this is so slow, then why would people even run these algorithms on the system? So there are known techniques to actually force caching to happen. What you're doing, is that you're basically finding the end result of your iteration, you're forcing it to materialize, and you're rewriting it so that it specifically takes advantage of that cache material. So we compared how Acorn did even when we used this hand-optimized technique to force caching to happen on its own, and we still outperform even the hand-optimized technique. So we're getting all the benefits that we would get from having like this really specific knowledge of our system and writing our programs to benefit from it, but we're also improving over that, even that. We also ran this on a couple of other algorithms and got very similar results. So in conclusion, this is Acorn, which solves a really classic optimization problem of being able to reuse things from the cache in distributed data systems. And we also built the first UDF translator that we know of that can actually work on general purpose object-oriented languages like Java and Scala and turn them into a SQL statement. And so all of this was implemented and we integrated into Spark 2.3.2. And thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions?
So there was a performance plot where you had TPC-DS iterative. Like, how did you guys make TPC-DS iterative? Like,
that's a good question. So there's two ways that we did this, and that's why this is represented as two plots. So TPCDS actually categorizes its own queries. There's 99 queries, and four of them are considered iterative, where they come with multiple versions. So they have an A version and a B version. And then there's like supplementary materials where they give you even more versions of those queries. So those are the iterative ones. And then for the reporting queries, all of these queries are parameterized. So you take a random roll, and you roll from a set of parameters, right? So what we did is we just re-rolled the parameters for a subset of the reporting queries, just a random sample of reporting queries, to get like a similar structure but like different values kind of thing. We do better on the iterative queries than the reporting queries because they're designed to be iterative and the reporting ones are random.
Hi, awesome talk. So as a follow-up, actually, I had a similar question that the applications you mentioned about, like iterative, you know, computation. So for example, like connected components and so on, you would normally implement them not as SQL queries probably, right? So it would be some kind of like imperative programs or like some vertex-centric programs. How did you really implement that? And how are they really like, how would this, these things apply in that world when you have some Java program, for example, to implement that? And also, like, there's a similar work which appeared in, I think, VLDB called like Helix, trying to also like reuse this pipelines. So if you can say something on like how it relates to that work.
Sure. So for the first question for connected components, we used the standard library implementation of it. And so what's happening for us is that we're working with the actual plans once they've been analyzed. So we're working with the things that are the native, like the tree-like native expression of it internally. So for all of those programs that are turned into MapReduce programs, like you're just taking anything that has been run in Spark SQL and just taking the plans from there and comparing them. So anything that's turned into like a Spark plan, we can work with. I don't know if that fully answers your question.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. And then I'm not familiar with Helix, actually, so I don't really know what to say to that unless you have more information about what it does.
Yeah, let's take this offline. Any other questions? The next speaker can come set up in the meantime. I have one question, actually. This is really cool, and I think the work with UDFs seems like it has applications beyond mm-hmm. just the...
caching.
Well, beyond caching, but also beyond frameworks like Spark to mm-hmm. just relational databases in general. Have you guys looked at all to applying this to other database systems?
Yeah, so I've kind of looked into how this would apply to other systems on both sides. So you have things that like append-only data stores like Bigtable where you could reuse the caching part. The UDF translation definitely has like a lot of broader applications. So I think it does work as a standalone translator, so it'd be interesting to be able to like package that as something that people can use with a lot of different systems, because it really just needs the bytecode and some understanding of the native target language. Yeah.
All right, let's thank you one more time.